Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have my good friend and co-host Rossi with me, and I also have Eric Nazarin for his film, Die Like a Man. I can't wait to dive into this. I'm very both excited about it. Rossi just got done watching the film about an hour ago. I watched it over the weekend. I love the film. So let's go on ahead. Let's talk to Eric about his film, and let's do this, guys. And hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Lovely. Good.
We're doing fantastic.
Sorry, I'm in the dark. We're in the Million Dollar Theater. I was actually going to do the podcast from Sid Grauman's office in the 1917 room, but the sound and the music was so powerful. I was like, I'm in the car because you're going to hear crashes and stuff.
It's okay. But I just want to say welcome to the show, Eric. We both enjoyed your film.
Yes.
And the thing that I have to say I really liked about it was that you really captured the heart of Los Angeles and also – and here's the thing, it's the struggle of this young man and trying to find his own identity within this world. And also too, I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in my review, I said, I feel like he joined that gang because of the fact that he wanted to feel something with his dad because he never knew him. The only person that's close to him is his friend that he grew up with.
Right.
So that's what I got out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I mean, I think, fatherhood and the theme of absent fathers is such an integral part of the tragedy of machismo, right?
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter. I didn't want to make a gang film. It's not a gang film. It's not a film. It's a rite of passage story. Right. It's a mentor-disciple story about the ideologies we teach boys to become men by shedding blood. Whether that's a kid in Tora Bora in Afghanistan, whether that's Bud or a Crip in L.A., it's the Vice Lords, it's New York, Hatfields and McCoys, it doesn't matter. It's the history of this obsession with violence becoming the medallion to manhood. And I have seen so much of that tragedy growing up as an Armenian immigrant in L.A. in the 80s. And surrounded by a multi-ethnic group of brothers and sisters that were Black, Mexican, Salvadorian, Vietnamese, Cuban, Haitian. It was a different time there until crack hit the streets. And we were all, you know, very well educated from very good families. And we were DJing, and it was the era of NWA and Atari and Dogtown. And then suddenly the LA became City of God. It just became a complete, absolute chaotic landscape where best friends were becoming enemies for no reason other than what side of the street they lived on. And so as an image maker, coming from a family of art lovers and culture lovers. My father was a filmmaker in the former Soviet Union and a cineast. Cinema was the incredible outlet that we had, the bonding mechanism. So I had such a great father, rest in peace. He was my everything. I had so many friends who didn't. I wanted to pay homage to those who didn't and to kind of point to the dangers of, you know, the inevitability of what we're teaching kids. This film is not about the trigger finger. It's about the battlefield. Right. The mindset.
Right.
And I want to mention this though too, because Theo mentioned this. He said Die Like a Man is a 1-week theatrical run in Los Angeles at $1 Million Theater, and it's going to be available digitally everywhere on April 25th, so just a couple of days away. Right. So that's exciting to actually have that available and access for everybody to be able to enjoy just like we did.
Yeah.
I absolutely, like John said, I just finished watching the film and I was gripped from the time I started the movie. This film was so powerful. I remember getting done and looking at my husband saying, wow, what a powerful film and story. Because throughout the whole film, you know, it's really tense. I mean, Freddie's like a 16-year-old when we meet him. He has his birthday. And like you said, the choices that they have to make, it's like the world's on their shoulders. When they leave out, most kids go out and go play. He goes out and has to make these decisions. And, you know, the ones that his elders that he's looking up to are the ones that are kind of leading him down this path. And he's just trying to figure out who he is. And you, it's like you're going through it with him. And I was totally gripped because I thought at some point, oh my gosh, they're going to off him. They're going to get him. They're going to, because of all the choices and the things that he had to do to prove that he's a man. And his idea of being a man, instead of just enjoying being a child where he's living at and where he's growing up at, he doesn't have that opportunity. And you see that, you know, he comes from a good home. He has faith. I mean, it's where you would want your child, how you want your child to be raised. But even with that and having that faith and a mom who doesn't want him to go down that wrong path, he still has to deal with the pressures of what they consider being a man is, which is taking someone's life, prove that you're hard, even being jumped into the gang. It's like, I don't think he wanted to do this, but he's looking up to, you know, the older guys in the neighborhood that already, that's what you do. And throughout the film, he's talking about going to Chino. Like his goals were to go to Chino. And there's a scene where he's with Luna. And when she's kind of trying to get him to see there's more than just this neighborhood, you know, there's a whole world out there. And he finds that to be funny because he doesn't see that. I also want to mention the part where he's able to be a kid when he's with Luna, the where he's making that paper boat and he's watching it go down the stream. And I'm looking at that because he's looking at it like he just wants to go somewhere. It's like the boat's floating away and I want to go with it. And that was just a really, really good scene, but it was a good movie. I cried. I got emotional. The so-called stepdad scene.
Yeah.
So good. So good. I just have to say that.
God bless you. Thank you. Every point you hit on is like a target bullseye to the soul of my heart, which is why the paper boat was something that I used to make when I was a kid. Yeah. And my brother and I would go to the LA River. He was 7 years younger than me. He passed away from an illness, but we'd always make these paper boats and we floated down the river. And so I wanted to just pay tribute to the memory of that inspiration because the boat represents the dreams that he's trying to escape to in the prison of the world he's trapped in by the decisions made out of sheer sincere ignorance. See,
right.
Not a bad kid. He makes a mistake he makes a mistake. And this is a story about, for me, this film, every time I viewed it over the past years that I was making it, it took a long time because I didn't want to compromise. I wanted to cast it from the streets. I wanted to go back to the Italian neorealism that I love and the early films of like Martin Scorsese, Spike Lee, like the streets.
I got that vibe.
Yeah.
And this was really for me as a former photojournalist, you know, I love the earth. I love the people. There's no greater landscape to me in the world than the human face. And that's why. Away from Frankie at the doorstep, the stepfather, you know, the boyfriend, talking about, you know, there's, you know what they say about prayers and tears, you know. This was really going back to my heroes like Elia Kazan and Sidney Lumet and Stanislavski. And I trained the kids in Stanislavski method for a year because we shut down during COVID. We were supposed to shoot this film on March 12, 2020 when the world shut down.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We lost everything. I had to restructure everything, you know. And go back again a year later, go back around and just try to make it. And we shot this during COVID, the height of COVID. And then it was just one after the other, the surge and then the strikes and everything. So, you know, this film is a testament to resilience. It's a testament to endurance. But the most important thing for me, I don't aim for the head. I aim for the heart. And I didn't want to rush through a story about a young boy, a gun, a gang. I mean, this is really a story for me about a young deer who thinks he's a wolf. And and
because he's not a
wolf, you know, he learns a terrible decision about self-deception.
Right.
And self-deception is something that our society needs to learn to come to grips with. Because every day we're deceiving ourselves in different ways, thinking there are these militarized codes of violence that are going to get us somewhere by wreaking havoc. And so I felt like this was, to me, an attack on this patriarchal psychotic system that is universal. It doesn't matter if in LA, you know, a street story. It could happen in Rio. It can happen in Korea. It can happen in Russia. It's happening now all over the world. Right. And so it was kind of like a warning shot, my last warning shot. Like, where are we headed with gun violence in this country now? Like, you know, this so not about the trigger finger. It's about finding ways to change how we think in our mindset.
Be better, right?
Help these kids. And that's why I said no to so many companies that wanted this film, you know, because it was inequitable. It was unfair. Mm. Independent cinema is really in a tough spot. And I just did not want to compromise one frame, 1 millimeter, and betray the essence of what I tried to build. So you guys saying that means a lot to me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
On that. You're welcome.
The very thing talking about were the things they were saying, well, you know, we could use, you know, is it really necessary to have the boat? Is it really necessary to have the stepfather? Mm. These are the heart and soul.
You need them.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. I actually got pulled on this in my review. I said, it has aspects of A Bronx Tale with Sonny and Clodderall.
Yep.
Where you learn from the street life, but you also don't need to just learn from the street life. You also need to be in school too to learn and get your academics. Then you also are pulling from Baby Boy with the stepfather as well. And I feel like the stepfather here's the thing. At first, we don't understand him. He's banging on his head. As the character is, we're like, well, what's his deal?
Then
find out he's angry at himself for his past mistakes. It's dealing with past mistakes and self-identity in a way that I feel like is perfect for someone that's a coming-of-age story.
Right.
And, you know, and the thing that I liked is when the stepfather goes on ahead and covers for he goes on ahead and covers for him.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of Baby Boy whenever where Marvin's covering for Baby Boy, covering up the fingerprints. He goes, how much did you take? He goes, I took enough. He goes, let me see. He goes, he goes on ahead, covers it up for him.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, I get it. I was young myself. I went down the wrong road just as you're going on the wrong road. But sometimes in life, you also have to decide on what road you want to take.
Right.
Yeah. As well.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the weirdest thing was there's a lot of uncanny things that happened in the making of this film because, you know, the Berenice who plays Freddie's mom had never acted before. She was helping me at the table. And when she read the script, she pulled me aside and said, Eric, are you like following me? This is my life to the T.
Wow. And
I have a Freddie at home right now. I don't know if he's going to come home every night. I don't know if choppers that are flying overhead. And her son was very actively, heavily involved in the gang. And she was trying to turn her life around, her community's life around by using, the acting and getting into film as a way of, as the deterrent. So I had already created this program, you know, called Integrating Cinema Communities, which was to use film as a driver for social change by uniting film literacy through filmmaking, teaching the kids behind in front of the camera, training them in the Stanislavski, Boleslavski, Meyerhold method that my father taught me in his Tarkovsky generation that he had learned. And just to prove that art is universal, art needs to transcend border, language, tongue, politics. And then bridge that with academia and activism, go into the neighborhoods, talk to the old school OGs that really, really were, you know, heavily in the life in Venice, because Venice was the black and brown community that I loved so much. It was integrated. It was skating, Dogtown, surfing, gangster, boardwalk culture. It had such a rich plethora. And when I was, you know, there in the late 90s, when I was USC film school student, I was like, why hasn't anybody told the story of Oakwood and this ecosystem on the four corners of the West Side? So I felt setting it there broke that ethnic barrier of just the black film, the Latin film. I didn't want that. Ethnic Armenian that was raised very multi-ethnic since the age of 4 here. I just find the world that I grew up in on the screen. So I said, I'm going to put it there. And I'm not going to ask anybody's permission except my communities because they know me. I've lived there. I've seen it. You know, I've done my time there. And cinema for me is the greatest tool of illumination and transformation there is. You know, it takes worlds. You know, we casted well over almost 2 dozen. You know, system impacted individuals. I trained them, employed them. And then they went off to work on Hulu shows and Amazon shows. And
Netflix. Nice.
Now we're talking about all this because I wanted to release this film independently, theatrically myself, so that I could have a community feeling because LA needs healing right now. We're in a lot of pain after the fires. The whole country's in a lot of pain for all the obvious reasons. But cinema has, we can't grow as human beings stuck to our cell phones. You know, our cell phones are poison after a certain point, you know, and we need a community theatrical experience. We had some insanely emotional responses this weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, I've shed quite a few tears this weekend because people came out San Diego, you know, mm-hmm. Inland Empire. One young man came out from Chicago, like mm-hmm. hearing film because there's a thirst for catharsis. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we need to stop taking shortcuts and really talk about the difficult themes that have no resolution with love and empathy.
Right.
I agree.
Right. I must say that, speaking of the cast, I mean, what an amazing cast. I didn't even realize they were acting. You forget that you're even watching the film because the way that you shot it, I like how you took your time. Like you said, the movie goes slow. You follow Freddie every day back home, where he's sleeping at the night, meeting up with friends, going to the park. I like how you just took your time with telling this story of this young man. And then when you get to, you know, I don't want to say what happens, but when he finally makes his final decision, I remember at that point, I'm like looking in the background, waiting for someone to ride up, whatever, because you know, he's gotten himself into it so deep. But I love the fact that throughout the whole film, after he goes and commits his first shooting that he had to do, he doesn't know if the guy lives or if he died. We don't know that either. So, you know, being that he was raised well, it weighed heavy on him. So the crying and not being able to cry because men are told you're not supposed to cry. Don't cry. He was so burdened with what he did. And then to go back to that neighborhood, I'm thinking, what are you doing? Why would you go back? They're looking for you. And then to find out what he thought he did, he didn't do. And I remember for me as a viewer, I was like, whew, okay, good. He didn't, you know what I mean? It didn't happen. I was so relieved for him that it didn't happen. But the cast was amazing. And the mother, being a mother.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need. And 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line. Plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax. For limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Myself and her talking to him just brought tears to my eyes because he's young and he doesn't see it and understand it. And when she was telling him, one day you're going to talk to your kid and this is going to happen, I'm welling up because I'm a mom. I've been there. I've had those conversations. Thank good. I have, you know, great boys, but you know, teenagers can be teenagers. So I felt her pain because as a parent, you do everything that you could do to make sure that your child doesn't walk down the same road that you took. And I know she's right. He just doesn't know that. And you're just praying that he gets it, that he just gets it. Cause you want him to live. You want him to make it through this hard period that he's going through.
Yes, so beautifully said. And it's so true. And thank you again for saying that. On the Die Like a Man official page on Instagram, today they posted this montage of moms talking about it that were visiting yesterday. Watched the film. Kindred exactly to what you're saying. So the synchronicity of this theme of the ache of motherhood, that ache that you can't communicate to the child, it's a gift that was brought into the world by the grace of God and the blessings of life and the chance, right? The roulette, you know, it's like none of us here were given. We're all gifts. We didn't know we were going to be born. We are born. So if I could have 1% where I can convince people to remember the fragility of life in the midst of all this militarization, all this noise of civilization, it's all about toughness and heroes and all this bullshit. if I could just point to that moment of fragility and forgiveness, because this film in the first half, I built it like a lowrider, like a Harley Davidson. It's custom built enough factory. It's built frame by frame very carefully, obsessively, to crescendo in a way where the begins with this machismo, this crunch of the montage, and it's all about brainwashing and muscle. Yeah. And then the moment that thing happens, which we won't give away any spoilers,
right.
The film goes into, instead of staccato, I switch the editing style into this deep meditation of loss and regret. And with that regret, you know, you start to find the road to conscience. And I believe that finding conscience has a lot to do with facing the irreversible decisions you make. Mm-hmm. By the nature of that irreversible decision, my hope is that a kid who's now at risk can see this film.
Yes.
And take a second guess about what he's about to do.
Yes.
And I'll share with you one, the probably the most profound, most painful, most unexplicable reaction I had was I had a very private screening for a group of moms who had lost children to gun violence within the past year, about a year ago, a year and a half ago. And the film was still raw. It's very similar to the form it's in now. It's, you know, very, very minimally different. And when the film ended, there was just this incredible unease in the room. It was just intense. Guys that had been to prison were there. They were sweating through their shirts and everybody couldn't talk. And this one mom just walks up to me. She like grabs me. She hugs me. She like buries her face in my chest and just starts crying. And it was just really excruciating. And I teared up and she just looked at me and she said, I wish the boy that had murdered my son seen your film the night before, maybe he would have changed his mind. And to me, that entire thing, it was eviscerating. I didn't sleep the whole night because I was just so floored, because it was the word maybe. That film has the power to maybe change your mind and to alter
past. That's what I like about it though, too, is like just how deep it is to where it has different layers to everything in everyday life when you're a 16-year-old kid and trying to find your own identity in this world. And he's trying to use anything, any means necessary. Well, maybe if I go to this gang over here, maybe I'll be accepted.
Yeah.
Or if I just put up a wall, nobody will see the cracks that are inside of me. Right. And the only one that's allowed to see this is Luna, my girlfriend.
Right.
And nobody else can see those walls or anything. And whenever I'm there, I have to put up this hard edge of trying to be somebody that I'm not.
Right.
And, you know, it has so many layers to it. People can resonate with it. And I think that's why, you know, mothers can identify with this, because everybody has a Freddy in their life.
Right.
Where they can actually care for their son and show them this. It's like, look, you can go down this road and be on the wrong road, or you can choose another life that's outside of this life. You don't have to go down that road to be accepted or anything.
Mabel and Luna are the lighthouses that he just doesn't see, because he's sailing his boat into a storm.
Yeah,
lighthouse. Hey, let's pull you back from that cliff's edge. Come on, you're sitting on a branch and you're sawing it off. You're gonna fall. You're gonna break. You're gonna die. And so that's really everything. And that's what I think the boat is, to your wonderful point. That like the boat represents that dream, like everything right in front of you, and you can't see it.
Right. And Freddie had dreams. Remember, Freddie had dreams. He told his mom what he wanted to do. So it's not that he didn't think about it. He wanted to do things, you know. But again, you know, he has that pressure from, you know, his neighborhood friends and the mentor that he was looking up to. So I did want to mention that he wanted to have a car wash. Like, he thought about this. So he wanted to go somewhere. And I do want to say this film absolutely. Young men, women should definitely, young kids, watch this film. This is one that parents should sit down with their sons, with their daughters, and really watch this film. This is a really good film, and it's like a lesson. It's like you're being taught a lesson, and Freddie's going through this, so you don't have to go through this. So I definitely think that this film definitely should be viewed.
So beautifully said, dear. And on that note, the serendipity of it all is tonight's 8 o'clock screening. We have 75 youth that are coming, sponsored by my brother, Corey Hardrick, who's one of the most brilliant actors in the world.
Yes. Who
plays the role of Solo with such gravitas and such love and sincerity, reminding him that his mother's only got one mother in the world. At the same time, he said, like, I'm already dead because the system completely
changed. Right.
And so that's the beauty of it, is that he introduced me to this wonderful friend of his, Delaine Atkinson. They have this nonprofit called Cultural Bridge. So they bought 75 tickets to bring.
Wow.
That's awesome.
LA to have it. So we have a Q&A tonight with Corey after the 8 p.m. screening. And if you're in LA, please let me know. You guys are my guests. For me, the most important thing is building hands together, because you, as Abraham Lincoln said, you can't shake hands with a closed fist. So if you can get people to really wake up and see their mortality, their fragility, then maybe we have a chance to really build an effective treatment, because this is some of the hardest things in the world that we're never going to get past in our lives, which is we don't know what's coming if we don't look at the worst manifestation of the social problems with a sobering eye. And the issue is not just the guns. The issue is the mindset that allows proliferation. So we have to stop colonizing people, and we have to start decolonizing ourselves and our mindset, and understanding that this is such a big problem. We don't need a 3-second answer. We don't need a 3-line answer. Like, we need to look at life in its complexity and embrace it. And cinema has that capacity. You know, fiction can go places where the documentary can't.
Right.
And vice versa, you know? And that's why I feel like it's so important, you know, from what you guys are doing, because it's about cinema, about movies, about interpretation, and about finding the human cause, not just the entertaining one.
Right.
I agree. There was something I wanted to ask you, though, too, is like, what is something that you observed in the past you back pocketed and started a way for the future, for your future projects? But what is also something with your approach with directing, making art, leading a set that is uniquely your own, that says this is an Eric Nazarene project?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, the most important thing is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do anything in life if I don't trust the people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we shot this film in 13 days plus one split. Mm-hmm. You know, SAG ultra low, Writers Guild ultra low, like, you know, under 12 hours a day. Like, I had miscarried this film 4 times. So by the time he came to make it again, it was like Theseus and the Minotaur. I'm going to kill the Minotaur. Minotaur's not going to kill me. I'm going to kill him. And I don't care what I have to do to make my days, what I have to do to get my shots. Like, it's on, right? But it's the nature of trust and the nature of being able to use the cinematic palette to express the unspeakable. It's like, you know, The Little Prince, where he says, all that is essential is invisible to the eye. The true language is the language of the heart. So for me, I like to make films about the heart in conflict with itself, the barbed wire, the things that are so ineffably human that we all feel, but we just have a difficult time expressing. So I spend a lot of time, you know, my masters like Martin Scorsese, you know, Spike Lee, Adam McGoyan, my mentor, you know, I was at USC Film School. So it was like the Navy SEALs of film schools. Like, we just went, we were 2 years of like Gladiator School, learning cinema, pure, telling stories.
Words.
So my father trained me, because he was also like, I inherited this beautiful gift that he blessed me with. So this is from my bones, from the embryo, this came. And so I feel like there's so much missed opportunities of filmmakers and filmmaking, the stories I want to tell that bridge humanity in a way that points to the heart and not the head so much. And that's why working with the actors over several months, training them, you know, Elia Kazan, Nicholas Ray, Cassavetes, these were my idols when I was in film school. And I took that path of granular, grassroots, organic filmmaking, because I love this medium too much. Movies are only 130 years old. Painting is 20,000 years old. You know, literature is 5,000-6,000 years old since there was written word, right? Like, cinema is a baby medium. You know, people talk about the death of Hollywood. Fine, go for it. Cinema is baby. You know nothing what we're capable of yet. And we're going to change that. And we have to do it through our ecosystem. Because the system failed. The executives failed. I've been in this industry my whole life. You know, as a screenwriter, as a nickel fellow from the Academy, like, I've seen it all. I've seen how devastating greed and stupidity can do. And I came here for cinema. I didn't come here to, you know, make a buck. You know, I came here to make movies. Hopefully, hopefully change my world at least in 5%, you know.
Right.
There's one more thing I want to talk about before we wrap up. too, is like the music choice with this. It has like a 1950s, 60s kind of thing to it. I love it because it makes me think of A Bronx Tale because of that doo-wop group and stuff like that. So my thing was this, like, where did you get the idea for placing that music the way you did? Is it because of the fact that, you know, Freddie's dad grew up with this guy and he's having this vision of his father in a way, and his father looking at him and that music is playing? I just love the way that you put that style into it. It becomes a character in its own self.
Right.
So much. I'm so glad you asked that question because I'll say that, you know, when I was in the 90s, I was a, you know, amateur DJ. So we used to DJ a lot and I used to spin a lot. So there was all these music from the 50s and the doo-wops and Delphonic Stylistics, Bretton Wood, El Chicano. These were all part of our ecosystem growing up. We used to spin these songs and we used to listen to them in high school because it was very much called the gangster oldies, the lowrider music, the music that you do while lowriding. And there was this volume of records called East Side Story Volume 1 to 10 where that had like this mixtape of all oldies. So we grew up on that. So I wrote these songs into the film thinking, I'd get them, right? And then my brilliant music supervisor, Martin Maiku, who worked with me for years, going through and trying to find, you know, In the Still of the Night by the Del Satins, you know, Keep Dreams, all that I'd written, all these songs were either way too expensive or the rights to Keep Your Dreams burnt down in the fire, so we couldn't find the publishing and master rights. So I found this incredible group that I love, Los Yesterdays, Vic Benavides and Gabe Roland, and I reached out to Vic on Instagram. And they wrote two songs for the movie in the tattoo scene, shooting scene when he, you know, I won't spoil it, but, and then, you know, we licensed one of the songs, but the idea was to create this plethora, this nice cornucopia of music that's oldies, that's very rooted in the East and the Los Angeles lowriding culture. Also with the strings that my brilliant composer, John Jennings Boyd, composed, because I wanted to have this beautiful feeling of innocence of the deer, you know, with the strings and have this, these crescendos that felt like that boat going down the river. So it was like strings and oldies music that represented a naturalistic palette of LA, not the gritty, nitty Training Day, you know, that type of like colors, but it was more of like the fluidity of the humanity.
Okay. I like that. But, Eric, I know that you have to get ready to do your, Q&A and everything, but I do we both appreciate
absolutely.
You taking the time out, giving us 30 definitely. Minutes before you have to go into the Q&A.
Thank you.
Give Corey the best because he did a fantastic job playing solo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And please come back. Seriously. Yeah. We would love to have you. I would love to geek out with you more.
Yeah. About cinema. And look, let's see how this does on VOD. It's dropping on April 25th. We're here until April 24th, Million Dollar Theater downtown, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., 8 p.m. Yes. You know, it's a community event. There's beautiful people coming. I want people to be cathartic, have catharsis, have conversation. Yes. I mean, kids are in the theater right now, anywhere from 12-year-olds to 80-year-olds.
So awesome.
I just can't thank you enough for all your perceptive questions, your beautiful viewing of the film. This is like a dream, so I would love to come back anytime you want me back.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you so much.
Always here to get your back, and thank you for supporting cinema and independent film.
Of course.
You're very welcome. And this is the biggest dream for us, too, to have you on as well. It's a pleasure to have you.
Likewise.
Very welcome.
Thank you so much. To be continued.
Absolutely. To be continued.
Thank you so much. God bless.
You're very welcome.
Bye, sir.
All right. Well, guys, that's going to be it as far as this interview goes, but I hope that you guys enjoy this. Go on ahead, smash that like button, subscribe button. Rossi, I know you have an interview for Rossi, for your show. Yep. So, go on ahead.
Yeah, I'm interviewing Lance Laswell this evening here in the next few seconds. So that interview will come, it will drop soon, you guys. So thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Well, guys, that's going to be it. And thank you so much. We do appreciate it. And we are out. Bye, guys. Later.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. so time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.